is.
What are you doing that stupid trickery crap for?
Is Felger and Mass.
The continued ish.
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Clearly, there's been so much stuff between Brady and Belichick and the entire organization during the course of this offseason. Is there any way of getting a sense of where things stand now as he returns to camp?
Let's start with Brady himself and just sort of what he's been doing this week, which might lead us in that direction. You mentioned the veterans, most of them reporting today, but Brady and the quarterbacks have already been here for a couple of days. And some might ask the question, what does the reigning National Football League MVP do to get ready for his 19th season? Well, I'm told he calls in his personal throwing coach and starts working on his mechanics just to make sure everything is in fine order. Sort of like if you were taking your car out for a long trip, you want to make sure you get that tune up, the oil change. So Brady, I'm told, has been here at the crack of dawn before 7 o'clock, spending long days here, and that he's as excited as ever for his 19th season.
What time did he say Brady gets there in the morning this week?
5 a.m. Did I hear that correctly?
7 a.m., crack of dawn.
Some Patriots porn for you there, courtesy of Mike Reese.
That's encouraging to hear.
There's a good little cartel report there. Love you, Mike. Mean it. All due respect, though. I mean, that's...
Which means I don't respect you.
A little bit of Patriots porn. No, I do. We all have our roles, right? It's a little late for me to be sold on Tom Brady and all the work that he's put in this offseason. Like, I mean, great. I'm glad you're here early, and I'm glad you're there at 5 in the morning or 7 in the morning with your throwing coach and all that. Like, yes, it's about time. Thank you. But I'm sorry. There's been too much of the other stuff this offseason of him being AWOL for me to feel good about it, you know, in totality. How do I feel about Brady's offseason? I hated it.
So you're with Maz on this because this is what he was talking about and started the show with on Monday, that he thought all this talk of Brady being there early, too much was being made of this, and players like Matthew Slater talking about it. He's like, okay, it still matters to me that he wasn't there for the OTAs.
Of course. Absolutely.
And you still think it may show up on the margins, as you say.
Yeah, for sure. Yes. I mean, I don't know. If you don't put in the same amount of work, how can you be as good as you could possibly be? No, I'm not telling you he's going to suck. I'm just telling you, you know, if all that work got him to this level, my hands above my head, maybe putting in less work takes him down just a half notch. I mean, that's what all these games come down to. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know how you could think it wouldn't affect him. Again, no one's saying he's going to suck. But how do you put in less work at an advanced age and get better? Explain that to me. That's just not... Is that possible?
Well, I'll defend it anyway because I didn't want him to be there just to stick it to Belichick, but I do think it's better overall that he's there early.
Yeah, so I'll take it. Better late than never. Get your ass in there and let me show me the old Brady. First one in, last one out, putting in all the work.
There's part of me that's actually a little bit surprised he's even there early because I thought there may be not a holdout situation, but he would show up, you know, when he exactly needed to be.
Did you cover this the other day? Apparently, don't quarterbacks and injured players have to show up 3 days early?
I can't speak to that, no. But
I thought I'd read that somewhere that the reporting date for guys rehabbing injuries, rookies and quarterbacks or something like that.
Do.
Like there's a whole group of players that have to show up 3, 4, 5 days early, whatever it is. And quarterbacks were part of it. So he wasn't technically that early. He was just showing up early when other groups had to show up. And if I have that
Comparatively speaking,
you can correct me, which I'm sure you will. I want Brady being in there early, staying late, first one in, last one out. I fall into those cliches. I always have. And so if he wants to do it, fine. Thank you. Better late than never. I am a little disappointed Belichick wasn't asked about Brady today. And there's simple way. I don't want to instruct the media because
You were one of these guys.
I don't go down there. But
you covered the team.
It's a simple question to ask to get a little glimpse. And the question for Belichick today on Brady would have been this. Have you talked to him yet? Have you guys talked? Quarterbacks are in. Have you talked? And that's just, the way he answers, the length of the pause.
Right, I mean, I got a little something.
Right, you get a little glimpse into, and then maybe he expands on the answer. And maybe he doesn't. And then you can read into it or whatever, but it's like...
Talk to all the players.
You know, instead of going into this long question that you know he's not going to answer, you know, what's your relationship with Tom? And did you see the Tom versus Tom? You know he's not going to get into that. But a simple yes or no fact-based question, have you spoken to Tom? They're in, have you spoken? He says, yeah, of course. I talked to all the players. You've had a good conversation. And maybe you get something out of it. So that's tomorrow. That should be a simple question tomorrow just to get a glimpse into where those two stand. Because, again, Greg Bedard on the Boston Sports Journal, nothing's been hashed out. So is that still stand today? Greg wrote that last week before Brady showed up. Brady showed up over the weekend. It's now day four that Brady's been here, starting at 7 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, whatever the hell he said. Plenty of time to talk to the coach, have a little clearing of the air. Have they? Have they spoken? Just have they spoken? Have you spoken? And so that's just a thought. Back to your phones. Here's Jay in the car. Go ahead, Jay. What do you got?
Hey, guys. Love the show. Hey, listen. It was on this show last year. You almost made me run off the road when, Felger, you asked the question. It was right before the Patriots and the Steelers played. You said, hey, who's going to be the biggest tool on the field on Sunday? And Maz said, oh, it's going to be Roethlisberger. There's not a field anywhere in any sport that has any bigger tool than Belichick. But Felger, you hit the nail on the head earlier in the show. If you go back and listen to some of his old Cleveland Brown press conferences when he was getting his ass kicked all the time, it wasn't, oh, kiss my arse. It was, I hope I have a job next week. Totally different person. Success has just blown this guy's arrogance out of proportion. And that's the larger issue why, you know, around this area, all I hear is, oh, the people hate us because we're successful. They hate Bill because he's a great coach. No, they hate Belichick and they hate the Patriots because of the arrogance. And it oozes off of Bill, and it infects everybody on the team so that I'm not going to come to OTAs, or I'm going to go race dirt bikes, or I'm going to do what I want to do. This arrogance permeates this entire team now, and it's sad because this could have been a beloved franchise. There's plenty of franchises.
It was not, Jay. They've won too much to be beloved. Yeah. So forget about that.
I mean, it'll always be beloved locally. Nationally, no. They've won too much. You're right.
Exactly. There was never going to be a beloved team when they've won like they've won. But the first thing he said, I'll grant, which is, why does Bill not answer the questions? Because he doesn't have to, is the answer. It's not because that's what's best for the team or this. That's because he doesn't have to. At the end of the day, he doesn't have to, so he doesn't.
Yeah, but to look back at, you know, press conferences he gave as a head coach of the Cleveland Browns 25 years ago, that's a little bit unfair.
But also, don't kid yourself, those suck too.
Yeah.
Because he just, he lacks sort of that.
He just doesn't have much of a personality to deal with a big group of people.
Right. It's not like, I'm not telling you he has Asperger's, but it's something like along those lines where he just sort of lacks that, as a lot of brilliant people do, by the way. So maybe that explains my people skills hook.
You would have to be brilliant and you're not.
A lot of brilliant people lack that, I don't know, because they're just sort of on a different level. They lack that ability to connect on a human level or a personal level.
Humanity is what
and,
it is.
And I think Bill sort of lacks some of that. If he had some of it, he'd be better off on a day like today. With just a little humility, act like something approaching like a human being, and opposed to, you know, just treating the people in front of you like children, just being a little bit of a real person would have helped him. But at this juncture, it's obvious
never going to happen.
It's just not going to happen unless one of his players goes on a murdering spree. And when you'd be a moron to then act the same way, and you have to do something differently. And that's the one day he did. That's the one day he did do something differently, but it took a murdering spree for him to do that. Think of that. Here's Pete in Delaware. Go ahead, Pete.
Hey, guys. Hey, you know, after his press conference, all I could think about today was when they had the story about Brady being called out during meetings for performance. How is Belichick going to call out his veterans for performance this year when he can't even call out himself for his own poor performance? I mean, I'm telling you guys, if they get off to a bad start, this thing could go sideways quick.
So, I mean, it'd be an interesting thing for Bill to do, you know, show lowlights of himself. And he did, you know, in fairness, there were sort of veiled references today that Bill was saying that, you know, I need to get better. I need to do things on my game. I need to get ready for the season. Like there was part of one of his answers where he sort of really mentioned that in a couple different ways, a couple different times. And do you have it, Jimmy?
It's important for me to have a good season in 2018. I'm going to do everything I can to do that, do the best that I can for our football team. That's my job, and that's my responsibility. That's what I'm going to try to do.
So, you know.
So maybe, okay, that's a little telling.
A little something there.
Hopefully you can respect that, but maybe not.
Yeah, well, no, we do,
turns
Bill.
Right back into a pud. But the, you know, that, like,
there's a little admission of, I screwed up. I feel like maybe I'm reading too much into that, but hearing that, it's like, okay, I got, you know, I got to do all this new work here. I got to, you know, play it again real quick, Jimmy.
It's important for me to have a good season in 2018. I'm going to do everything I can to do that. Do the best that I can for our football team. That's my job and that's my responsibility. That's what I'm going to try to do.
What answer was that a part of? That was part of a bigger answer about something else.
That was at the end of the Shaughnessy Q&A on Butler.
Okay, so I'm sorry. Very good.
Hopefully you can respect that, but maybe not.
All right, Bill. We got it.
So immediately turns right back into an ass after giving you a little bit of humility. So I hope you can respect that.
That's as close as you're going to get to, I kind of screwed up. I think that's his version of saying, you know, that's his mea culpa.
But again, you talk about those film sessions where he shows low lights and hammers guys in these team meetings. What if he did that with himself? And don't you think that'd go a long way with his players?
Just someone showing a reel of a crying Malcolm Butler on the sideline during the national anthem.
Like, I don't know how you'd show that, you know, without showing Eric Rowe getting toasted and Jonathan Batamosi getting toasted.
Go back to 2015, some of those terrible decisions, the mortar kick, having Steve.
Wouldn't you pipe in his headset to Ernie Adams?
We already knew it.
I don't even understand what that means.
So in other words, like Bill is calling a play, Ernie's telling him to call a play, and then Bill calls a play and it's wrong.
Something, whatever, just do a film session on himself. But there were little glimpses today. You had to dig.
Hopefully you can respect that, but maybe not.
Okay. No, we can. We continue with your thoughts. Belichick versus Shaughnessy. Do people actually have Shaughnessy in this one? We discuss right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. Bill, I know you're all about this year, and we all understand that.
That's right.
And I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't ask about last year.
Yeah, last year is last year. I'm not focused on last year. Yeah.
What about the fact that everywhere we go, folks want to ask about Malcolm Butler? I mean, sports coaches, players, university. You're a sports fan.
Yeah, we've talked about that. That's multiple months ago.
Is there going to be any more explanation about why he didn't play?
Focused on training camp.
Did you do it any differently?
Training camp? Well, we're getting started. We're working on that right now. We'll do it the best we can.
And does it matter to you? Do you care that the fans want to know more about this?
I'm focused on doing the best that I can for the 2018 New England Patriots. That's my job. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I've always done in the past. You know, every day that I've coached here, I've done the best that I could for this football team, and I'll continue to do that. And right now, my focus is on the 2018 season, not 2017, not 2014, not 2007, not 2004, not 2001, not 2000. I'm not focused on any of those seasons. They're done.
And for this season's team, is it important for you to address the Malcolm Butler thing with your team?
It's important for me to have a good season in 2018. I'm going to do everything I can to do that. Do the best that I can for our football team. That's my job and that's my responsibility. That's what I'm going to try to do. Hopefully you can respect that, but maybe not.
Shaughnessy and Bill, who do you got? The first time in history. This is a whopper. You might have Shaughnessy. So we asked the question earlier. We all know it's the cliche. Bill doesn't owe you anything. He doesn't owe the fans anything. He doesn't have to answer the questions. I've been hearing that for 20 years. Okay, I got it. Does that include this one? Does that include the Malcolm Butler? Do you feel that way about Malcolm Butler? Or is this the one time? Or maybe the second after the murdering spree? But is this one of the few times where Bill should actually answer the question? How do you feel about that, folks? Do you actually believe that this is the time he should answer the question or give you some sort of reason? So we asked it on the Felger and Maz Twitter page.
Where are we at, Jimmy?
And so what was the question again?
Do you want an answer from Bill Belichick regarding the Malcolm Butler Super Bowl situation? We have 2,658 respondents. 72% say yes. Wow. 28% say no.
Wow. 72% of you have Shaughnessy over Bill Belichick.
I feel vindicated. I said 80-20 earlier.
Holy crap.
Close.
I thought that was crazy. Shaughnessy? You folks are with Shaughnessy?
I mean, he's like the devil to a lot of Patriots fans.
That's how bad.
Boston sports fans overall.
That's how bad that Butler decision was. You got people siding with Dan Shaughnessy over Bill Belichick. Oh, I love it.
Mister, I'd rather stick needles in my eyes.
So, I mean, I just think he would help himself if he answered the question.
I don't think this is one of the stronger segments.
No, you're wrong, Dan. The people are with you. The people are with you, Danny boy. No, no, this is a strong segment. I just think Bill doesn't need to be such an ass. He just doesn't need to be. And he doesn't do himself any favors. He doesn't. And the people who think that he handles
my problem is with you.
Sorry, Dan, that he handles the people, you know, the media masterfully.
Larry,
it takes nothing to say no comment. That takes nothing. Anyone can do it.
It is not a tie.
It takes discipline. I'll give you that. It takes discipline, but it doesn't, you know, it's no masterstroke. There's nothing brilliant about it.
Play like dog do.
To walk up to the microphone and fart into it. That doesn't take anything.
Take that, Beetle.
So if Bill just handled himself a little bit differently and didn't, you know, treat the people in front of him like 12-year-olds, it certainly wouldn't hurt him.
Oh, my God. I'd rather stick needles in my eyes.
So it takes nothing for him to be asked a question to say, I'm on to 2018, to be asked another question. It's only focused about this year, to be asked about something else, to say, I only care about this year. That doesn't take anything.
And I just don't get it. Like, take a temperature, not just of the, you know, the room when you're in and answering these questions, but the region locally. Like, this makes absolutely no sense. Your legacy's kind of taking a little bit of a hit here because of this one decision. Just own up to it or say something.
You know, let me tell you what. I mean, I keep making the joke about the Hernandez press conference where he actually acted like something approaching a human being that day. Here's the fact. It's a cold, hard fact, Bill. More people care about the Butler decision. I mean, if you think it was important to, you know, give a little something on Hernandez, it might be more important for you to give a little something on Butler. More people care about the Butler decision than Hernandez. Don't you feel that way?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Because and even and look, I was
because I'll tell you what. If we asked the fans back in 2012, whatever year that was, does Bill owe you an answer on Aaron Hernandez? It wouldn't be 70-30 like this thing is.
No, it wouldn't.
Right?
And
you know
I think
what I mean?
The easy out, too, and I know I felt this way for a time, is, well, how the hell is Bill supposed to know what his player is up to 24-7? That's impossible. He's trying to run a football team. He's got 53 players to worry about here. One, how can he watch him and know what's going on with him? He shouldn't know. So he talked about it. We're good here. Let's move on. This is a coaching decision in the Super Bowl that it's inexplicable that he benched him and he had him out there for one special teams play almost for spite.
I just think there's a middle ground. I just think there's a middle ground there where he doesn't have to, he doesn't owe me an answer. Like, I don't expect him to give an answer. But to then turn around and say, you know, you're just getting ready for 18, I hope you respect that. I mean, you don't have to spit in their faces either. There's a middle ground
there. Hopefully you can respect that, but maybe not.
Right. Hopefully there's a middle ground there where it's, guys, I understand the question. It was a big loss. We all made mistakes. We all regret a lot of things, but I just don't think it's fair to my team. It's probably not fair to Malcolm Butler to go back and hash that out with you right now. And I do have a season to get ready for. Like, I get the question, and believe me, there's a lot of things we wish went differently that day.
This Butler and Hernandez comparison, though, it's because you can make the explanation that he wouldn't know what's going on with Hernandez all the time. But with Butler, this was your decision, dude. Come on.
What is he hurt by saying that? What is he hurt by just talking to Dan like a human being, as opposed to a piece of gum on his shoe? And he actually likes Dan, but in their roles today, that was gum on Bill's shoe. And he scraped it off like a piece of horse crap. Here's Tom in Jamaica Plain. What are your thoughts?
Hello there.
Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Good. Hey, Mike, here's my theory. Butler shows up, Super Bowl morning, hungover. Belichick smells his breath. And he says, uh-oh. Puts him in the play on the special teams. He screws it up, and he goes, game, set, and match. I'm not putting him in there and embarrassing me. He's thankful for Butler's big-time play in the Seattle game, but now he says, I ain't putting him in there. Sorry.
Okay, I don't think that's it, Tom.
Even if he was drunk, he's a better option than Jordan Richards or Johnson Badamosi.
If he showed up drunk, how do you give him a uniform? He's okay to, what, be the gunner drunk? Or I'm sorry, be the hold-up-the-gunner guy drunk? But he's not. No, that makes no sense.
Nothing happened. He had a hair across his ass. And you want further proof that nothing happened?
Nothing. There's no reason given because there was really no reason to do it.
If Malcolm Butler truly did something awful, if he showed up day of the game in Minneapolis, three sheets to the wind, like, I'm ready to play, coach, then Mike Vrabel or Matt Patricia would not have talked to him in the offseason and tried to sign him. He ended up signing with Mike Vrabel, one of the branches of the now Belichick coaching tree. Because Matt Patricia and the Lions looked at him, too. There were some rumors they were going to sign him. None of those guys would have touched him with a 10-foot pole if he did something actually that terrible. Nothing happened.
So
he pissed him off. That's it.
Murray's on the same page with me.
Something happened. I won't accept this answer. Something happened.
I think nothing happened. I mean, other than
you would have heard something back there, Scoops.
I did say something at the time.
Yeah, and still, that
what
wasn't
did you say?
Enough.
I said something about him getting into a pickle with the coach's kid.
Pickle. So that's, you know, he shoved Steve Belichick or something happened with Brian Belichick, like his kids on the staff or something happened there. It's been a theory. He showed up drunk, high, missed curfew, all these other things that you hear, right? Well, he's at that rap show with whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't think any of it happened. I don't. I think he was on the coach's bad side for a long time.
Even if it did, Mike, in that second half when they couldn't stop a nosebleed on third down time and time again against Nick Foles, a career backup. You have to make the decision. I thought you have to do what's best for the team. Put him on the field.
It's much better to bury him when he's standing there on the sidelines. That's a much better way to bury the guy. Just make him play special teams. There's precedent for that. Bill didn't like Wes Welker at the end either. He still let him play special teams. Benched him for the first quarter on offense against the Jets. He's done this before to embarrass players. And I don't think Malcolm really did anything other than...
I believe he's 0-2 embarrassing players during playoff games.
Fair point. Both times he did that, and they lost the game. I just don't think Malcolm did anything other than not take their stupid contract offer.
Boo.
Which he was smart to do. And then, again, in fairness, I don't think Malcolm Butler improved as a player after that point.
No, definitely
I think
not.
He had I don't know if it was a bad year, but it wasn't as good as the year before. And he started to freelance on the field. And I think even before Super Bowl week, there might have been off-field things, curfews and tardiness. I don't know if they have curfew during the regular season at home, but yeah, I mean, you know what I mean. I think there's...
lack of attention to detail.
He had to be babysat, apparently. Yep. So it all sort of built up with Bill. And maybe Bill had good reason not to, like, you know, he wouldn't work with us on a contract. He turned into an a-hole. His play suffered. We had to babysit him off the field. And now he's going to show up 2 days late for the Super Bowl? Screw this guy. We'll win without him. There's your answer. That's what happened. He didn't shove a coach. He didn't shove a coach's son. He didn't show up high drunk. He didn't. Nope. He was on the coach's bad side for a while. He showed up late for the game, and Bill said, screw this guy. That's what I think happened. And unless someone answers it or gives me a different reason, that's what I'm going with. So we'll continue with this all day. I mean, why not? Causing a lot of trouble with this, which is good. But we do have to get to the Red Sox and the Major League Baseball trade deadline. The Red Sox make a deal today. While the competition continues to make deals, we'll assess this entire situation.
Felger and Maz.
Oh.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
The 1-0. Line shot, scooped up by Scope to Beckham. That's one out of first. That's a double play. And that's how the ball game ends. Mookie Betts hit it hard, but into a double play, and the Red Sox rally in the rain falls just short. The final score, TC 7-6 tonight.
All right, Red Sox lose last night. Not the story, though. Story came with the trades in the next 12 hours. Well, at that time, there had actually been one trade that had already been made. And the reason the Red Sox weren't facing Zach Britton at that time, who was the guy they're facing? Who's also pretty good. I forget his name. What's his name? Whatever.
Romo?
No.
Oh, wait, no, you were in Baltimore.
The guy who was closing in Baltimore last night.
Brad Bach?
Bach. Thank you. Bach.
Brock?
They were facing him instead of Zach Britton because Zach Britton had just gotten traded to the New York Yankees. You had been in on Britton. You had wanted Britton, but you couldn't get him because of your system. You didn't have the ability to match the Yankees in terms of prospects. But you do then pull a trade today. Nathan Eovaldi, who's a hard-throwing, right-handed starting pitcher. He had a really good year in New York a couple years ago, then underwent Tommy John surgery and missed, 2 years, right, basically, and ended up in Tampa Bay. And so you trade Beeks. What's his first name?
Jalen Beeks.
Jalen Beeks is minor league reliever.
He projects to be like a fifth starter, essentially.
Does he?
Yeah.
So you traded that for Nathan Eovaldi. All right, so before we give you some more of the details, just your general thoughts on those transactions.
Well, I thought it was a reaction. You said it didn't have anything to do with last night's game. I think that deal for Eovaldi today was a reaction to last night's game and that start by Pomerantz, because Pomerantz still sucks. And their expectations, I think, are rock bottom for getting anything out of this guy in that rotation. The rotation's a bit of an issue. My hope was that they would make some kind of a move to add to it, because what's Eduardo Rodriguez going to be when he gets back from his injury? I like the move. Didn't feel like it cost all that much. It's just 1-1 for Beeks for this guy. So I like it. They still got to do something about that bullpen, clearly, because Joe Kelly was god-awful again last night, too. So it sucks that they lost out on Britton, but the Eovaldi move I like overall.
Okay. I like this guy as a reliever. I still don't feel they need starting pitching. I mean, could you improve it? Of course. It could be, always be better. But I think that's how their team's built. That's where their money is. That's the strength of the team, the backbone of the team, and that's that. I think it's – I still need bullpen arms. And this guy feels to me like more of a bullpen option, even though it looks like he's never really pitched out of the pen. I mean, just, again, looking at his stats, it feels like they're all – every game, they're all starts. You know, in New York in 2016, he had 24 games and 21 starts. So there must have obviously been three relief appearances in there. But otherwise, every other game has been a start until you go to his rookie year with the Dodgers in 2011.
No, but doesn't this free up, say, Pomeranz to go into the bullpen?
Well, I'd rather have this guy. He throws a million miles an hour. The guy throws 98 and strikes people out.
No, he doesn't.
Oh.
He has less strikeouts than innings pitched. He's not even a strikeout and inning guy.
How did you describe him to me earlier?
Well, no, but what he does do is not walk people. He's got 50, whatever it is, 53 strikeouts to just 8 walks. It's true that it's less than a strikeout an inning, but he is a strikeout guy who also gives up hits.
So wait, so 8.4 strikeouts per inning, per nine is now a bad number?
Yep, well, according to this guy.
I mean, look, I mean, baseball's gotten goofy with the strikeouts. You're telling
I'm
me.
I'm looking at a career of 6.7.
And I'm looking
this season to me is more important.
This year, he's striking out 8.4 per nine. So, I mean, I don't know. You tell me. I'm not.
For a guy who throws 98 miles per hour, those strikeouts should be better. They should be probably 1.5 times his innings pitched.
Okay. I no longer know what a good strikeout number is because.
I'm sorry. I have expectations for these guys. I mean, everybody throws 100 now, so they just got another guy who throws 100 and can't strike anybody out. I mean, this is garbage.
I also look at strikeouts to walk as an important ratio because you have these guys who can throw hard, but they can't control it, right?
So this guy doesn't
have that problem. 8.4 to me is fine. Jimmy is, you know, an angrier baseball fan than me.
Obviously, I I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying I don't know what a good strikeout number is anymore. If you're telling me 8.4 strikeouts per nine is a bad strikeout number, then wow.
Here's a more concerning
league's
number.
Gotten goofy. He throws 98 miles an hour.
So does everybody else in the league.
Drew Pomeranz doesn't, and you want Pomeranz in the bullpen. So that's how this started. I'd rather have this guy in the pen throwing 98 than Pomeranz, even though he throws from the right side versus the left.
Well, it feels to me they're going to use him as starter. That's what I like. But the more concerning number for me, the hell with strikeouts, in 9 games that he started this year. I actually think it's been 10 games he started. But overall, 5 starts against 2 against the Nationals, 2 against the Marlins, 1 against the Mets. He's 2-1 with an earned run average of 210. So pretty good, right?
So against the crap.
Yeah, against the crap. 4 starts. Against the A's, Mariners, Yankees, and Astros. 1 win, 2 losses with an earned run average of 448. Ugh. So, you know, I think your expectations should be, you know, middling at best with what he's going to be able to bring
but
to this team.
But it's also worthy of note that this is the best they're going to do.
Well, right.
I mean, yuck. Our email string began before this trade was done. And do you guys have any recollection of the only thing I contributed to the email today?
Yes, before you went golfing.
Yes.
you said something to the effect of whoever...
Their acquisition will be someone you've vaguely heard of and couldn't tell me what team they're on right now if I asked.
And you nailed it.
I mean, that's exactly... You're like, yeah, I've heard of that guy.
Marlins? The Yanks? Where is he now?
He was in Yankees at some point, and, you know, he was in Tampa Bay. You knew the name, but you didn't know much else about him. That is exactly... And by the way, there's a reliever out there somewhere right now whose name you vaguely heard of, but you couldn't tell me what team he's on because he used to be on some other team 3 years ago. That guy's out there somewhere, and he'll be on this team in a week.
Okay.
So that's what this team can get, and he's pretty good for that,
so,
I think.
So this guy missed over a full season with the Tommy John. His second Tommy John?
Yeah.
When was the first?
I don't know that one. He's got a pretty complete major league record, so
right.
It must have been early on in the minors or even in college.
Okay, so he had an earlier Tommy John and then one as a pro. But so he missed, full season, plus it looks like, with a Tommy John. But his last 4 full seasons, here are his ERAs as a starter. 4.37, 4.20, 4.76, 4.26 this year. I don't need that in the starting rotation. I don't need that. I can pull that out of nowhere. I can get that from whoever. I mean, really, you can get that from anyone.
But if the guy's never done it, I mean, is there going to be a lack of comfort level there? Like, I don't know. That's why it feels to me that this guy...
So put him there now. Start now.
You're getting a 6.91 from Drew Pomeranz.
Well,
so You can't get it from anyone.
I'd rather have Pomerantz start and this guy come out of the... I want heat in the bullpen. I want... I do. I want guys that throw hard coming out of the bullpen. Either way,
well,
like...
Joe Kelly does that and he blows.
This is what... fair enough. Fair enough. But here's what this tells me. So Jalen Beeks was the Red Sox number six prospect. Number six prospect. Okay? That gets them Nathan Eovaldi. Again, career 429. No, I'm sorry. His career earn run average is 422. Okay, a career 422 earn run guy, a fourth, fifth starter, borderline kind of guy. That's what a top 10 prospect.
Well, but don't forget, there's now a new number six prospect. Every time you trade away a prospect, somebody else moves up. So being the number six prospect in the Red Sox prospect class at this point doesn't mean a whole lot.
This is my point. If you let me finish it, you would have understood that.
Good job, Hook.
Number six prospect for the Yankees gets you a bucket of crap. The Yankees, in trading for Zach Britton, gave up their fourth prospect. Okay, a little bit higher, but their fourth prospect was this starting pitcher at AA, 24-year-old right-hander Dylan Tate, former first-round pick of the Texas Rangers. He's their fourth-ranked prospect. That got them a stud. So this is exactly my point. Again, if you let me finish, you would have been on the same side of the street of you, which is the Red Sox prospects suck. You give up a top 10 prospect and get a bucket of crap. The Yankees give up a top 10 prospect on their list and get one of the best relievers in baseball, or was one of the best relievers in baseball, one of the prizes of the entire trade market. This is a problem you run into. This is, and that's it to me. That's it in a nutshell. That if the Yankees give up a commensurate prospect in their system, they're getting somebody. You're getting a borderline guy.
Spare parts.
A borderline guy. I still think they need him more in the pen than they do in the starting rotation. But either way, whether it's Eovaldi, whether it's Pomerantz, whether it's Eddie Rodriguez, whether it's David Price, someone's got to go out there. Someone's got to go out there because I don't think they'll be able to trade for it. Let's pick this up on the other side. In fact, we'll get to Joe Kelly and his recent performance right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
You get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And 1-0 from Joe Kelly. And a base hit punch to right. That'll bring in another run. Nunez will touch home plate. So both of the walks have now scored. Scopes had a really nice night with three RBIs. Cora is coming out.
Coming out to get Joe Kelly, who sucked again. So even if you wanted to play this game, and you know what? Some of the numbers tell you can play the game, that their bullpen's actually been okay this year. You can actually play that game if you want to, because some of the numbers have been good, especially on Joe Kelly and some of the other guys. You can play that game.
Oh, believe me, I've heard that game.
Right? Joe Kelly, I don't know if you want to keep playing this game. The statistical game. Joe Kelly, this month, and again, here at Felger Mass, we play it straight. We don't draw the line arbitrarily to just find a bad number, Hook. We don't.
I know.
We don't say last 17 appearances if that proves our point or serves an agenda. No. We keep it honest. Last 10 or this month, last 20 or this half, things like that. We don't play those games. Going back to May 26th, just to draw the line in the right spot to give us the statistical sample we want, we keep it straight.
This show is firm but fair.
No tricks. No tricks. Firm but fair.
Just checking my email.
In the month of July. So again, we're not drawing an arbitrary date. Since July 1, as you would this month. Joe Kelly, 12-1-5 ERA. 12-1-5. 6 walks and 6 2/3. 9 runs, 7 strikeouts. So even if you want to play that statistical game with Joe Kelly, you can't because he's sucked.
I don't even need the numbers, Mike, to show how wrong everything's gone for Joe Kelly right now. All you needed was last night when he walked the worst player in baseball.
He walked Chris Davis?
Chris Davis walked, and then he let him steal second base, and then he walked the next guy. Chris Davis this year makes Jackie Bradley Jr. look like Mickey Mantle. He walked Chris Davis. That's how bad it is for Joe Kelly right now. He stinks.
Okay, so Eovaldi should help somewhere. Zach Britton, does he make a bigger difference for the Yankees than Eovaldi does for the Red Sox? Obviously, I don't even think we need to answer that question. Does it level the playing field in your mind when the Red Sox and the Yankees play in the postseason, if in fact they do? Yeah, this I didn't realize. The Red Sox, again, statistically have had a good bullpen, top five bullpen all season long. The Yankees have the best. They have the best bullpen ERA in Major League Baseball and best batting average against. And I also think the most strikeouts in the bullpen. So between Chapman and all those guys and Robertson, now they got Zach Britton added to that. And that's what I think wins in the postseason, as much as anything, is that bullpen. And you look at what Cleveland did with the San Diego reliever. And now you look at what the Yankees did with Britton. Eovaldi doesn't match that. Not even close. So do you handicap those series different?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to.
You had the Red Sox losing anyway, right?
I did, yes. Yeah, I still think they're going to lose in the first round. The asterisk is still there. The whiteboard's in my car. Look, at this point, it does feel like the American League East has been wrapped up a little bit, but come the playoffs, it feels like they're still extremely thin in that bullpen. And it's the reason I have the wheel of gutless bums. You can't trust any of these guys. You can obviously trust the closer, but anytime that he seemingly comes in to get, you know, a four or five out type of save, it usually ends up going wrong on him. Like, I don't know. They still have to add someone else there and have a decent setup, man, because you can't trust Kelly or Barnes or anybody else.
Here's another thing I didn't realize, and then I'll go to the phones. The Yankees have all this room under the luxury tax. Is that right, Jimmy? Are you the one who emailed that this morning?
That was a Maz email from a story in The Athletic this morning.
They have $11 million to go until they hit even that first level of the luxury tax. Is that right?
I believe that's correct, yes.
And you are already tight. You're already basically there at the third level. And I'm not sure if this Eovaldi signing puts you over, but it's pretty damn close. You're going over. Alex Speer just about told you were going over a couple days ago in the Globe. Which means you lose 10 spots in the draft, you lose all this money, which we don't care about, but you do lose draft positioning. By going over the third one, the Yankees have $11 million to go to get to the first tier. So not only do they have a much better system than you, they still haven't traded any of their top three prospects. And they have $11 million in room. You're no more room and no prospects. So I think you're already getting smoked at the deadline. That's just the way it looks, like you're getting smoked by the competition, and I don't know how it gets any better.
No, and they're certainly not done. They still have to add to their rotation, whether that's Hamels or Jay Happ or someone like that. But, you know, they expect the Yankees to make another move here between now and next week.
For a starter. They're going to get a starter. Jay in Providence, what do you got?
Hey, you guys kind of covered a lot on Eovaldi, took a lot of meat off the bone, so just wanted to kind of go over a couple of those things. I think he's good to pitch through the regular season as a starter, because he's a right-hander and we need a right-hander in the starting rotation. I'm not sure about the playoffs. I'm kind of going in between the four-man rotation or five-man rotation. I don't know. I think kind of the save sale, we need to go with the five-man rotation. But I think Pomeranz would be good out the bullpen as a lefty. It would kill two birds in one stone. We get our right-handed starter and we get our left-handed guy out the bullpen. And I think the bats can really save Eovaldi. You know, he's not – you let him pitch six innings, he gives up three runs. We can score five or six. That's good enough. I think –
okay, well, the offense, you know, that's a whole different story, and you're not going with the five-man rotation of the postseason. It's four. The question is who goes out? Someone has to go out there. You have to trade for a guy, whatever that is, whatever you can scrap together with your crappy-ass system and your no luxury tax room, whatever you can scrap together, you got to scrap together in the trade market. And, again, one of those guys, now it's one of four. Add him to the list. Price, Eovaldi, Pomeranz, Eddie Rodriguez. One of those guys has to go out there and assume a real role.
Well, if Rodriguez was healthy, I would say Price. And I know, like, people balk at them because he's getting $30 million a year and he probably wouldn't want to do it. But I think he would be best served to be coming out of the bullpen if Rodriguez is healthy. But he's not. So I tend to go with the caller. I think Pomeranz can be decent for an inning, and then that's it. And the reason they got this guy in the first place is to add Eovaldi into the rotation, because you can't have Pomeranz there.
As recently as 2015, pitched in 53 games for the Oakland A's. So of this group, he's got the most experience of being a reliever, and being a reliever that they went to a lot.
You're saying pitch 53 games out of the pen.
Well, 53, he had nine
starts.
That was
his total appearances.
In 53 games in 2015, nine of them start. So, you know, listen, I know we don't do math here, but that's roughly 44 games as a reliever for the A's, I think.
Does it matter to you who's out there?
No, I mean, I think one of these guys go out there. But I think David Price has shown, the only place he's shown success is out of the bullpen, at least in October, at least in the playoffs. So he would be the guy. But you and I have already been down this road 100 times. You don't want him there. You think he's your number two starter no matter what. So fine. If we're going to look at it from a purely baseball standpoint, then, well, Pomerantz is the guy who has experience, successful experience, and legitimate amount of experience.
Is it experience
as
or
a
stuff?
Reliever?
I mean, isn't bullpen about stuff?
Well, but there's a mental aspect as well.
Yeah, if that was the case, then Joe Kelly would be nails. We wouldn't have to worry about this. We wouldn't have this conversation.
You raise a good point.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.